Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. Joining me this morning is my special guest, Linda Juergens of the National Association of Mother Center. And in the next hour, we will be getting firsthand information from Linda about celebrating motherhood in the 21st century. Please call 347-327-9995 if you would like to join us on the air or to share your own experiences or have a question for Linda. I have some quick facts and statistics here before we get started. As of May 1st, 2009, the U.S. population stands at a little bit over 300 million people. According to the U.S. Census Bureau latest figures in 2004, there are 82.8 million mothers in the United States. In 2008, the census figure says that 5.3 million are stay-at-home moms, 9.8 million single moms living with children under 18. There are a lot of mothering going on and lots of challenges to be met and the opportunity to see mothering in a new way. This morning, we'll be speaking with someone who is immersed in all aspects of mothering, from what happens at home to what's happening on Capitol Hill. Linda Juergens is the Executive Director of the National Association of Mother Centers. Their vision is a society where the work of taking care of others is valued, supported, and at the center of public discussion and a priority in public policy. Some little facts about Linda. Linda was a school teacher. She started to work at the center during maternity leave, and in 1978, Linda co-founded the Sunrise Mother Center. Linda, thank you for joining us this morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me, Johnny.
Great, great. Happy Mother's Day, actually.
Thank you.
Let's get started right here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the National Association of Mother Centers and how this nonprofit got started and the number of members you guys have and how the center meets mothers' needs?
Okay. We got started out of a research project that a social worker did. She, in her clinical practice, she would hear mothers talk about the transition to becoming a mother as a time when their self-confidence was rocked a bit, and the pace and the pattern of their lives up to that point was very, very changed, like 100%. And she also related it to her own experience as a young mother of two little boys, and she could relate to what they were saying.
Right.
So she put an ad in the newspaper and attracted 40 respondents, all of whom had children 2 years or under, so they were relatively new moms, and they met in discussion groups with social workers who facilitated those discussions, and they talked about the reality of their lives, what was really going on, the joys, the challenges, etc., in a very real way. And they created a safe environment for the women to be able to share, you know, the real experience and not put a good face on it, you know. And when the research project was over, the women really enjoyed the experience, and more than enjoyed it, they felt that it had been beneficial to them, that they had learned from each other, that the environment that had been created was so supportive and non-judgmental that they wanted to find a way to replicate that experience for other women. So a number of those research participants and the social workers, the one who started the research project, her name is Patsy Torini, and one of the other social workers, Lori Slepian, worked with some of the research participants over the course of a year. A manual was written. They created the model for what they decided to call a mother's center. And there was discussion at the beginning about whether it should be a parent center or whether it should be a mother's center, because fathers could use some of the information and the exchange that goes on.
That's
however,
correct. Yeah.
This was happening in the mid-70s, and it was the women who were expressing their the changes in their lives more so than the men. It was the women who were more interested in this kind of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And there were very specific issues that the women dealt with that the dads did not. For example, their experience of pregnancy, delivery, even the fertility issues are different for men and for women. So there was somewhat of a focus on the women's health issues and the health issues around giving birth. So they decided that it was founded by women and that it was primarily women who were interested in it. So they decided to call it a mother's center. And part of that also was related to the fact that many of the women expressed the fact that their role as a mother, they did not feel was valued.
Mm-hmm.
It's valued in the sense that, you know, for Mother's Day, you get the thank you gifts and the cards, and people and society say, oh, you know, aren't mothers wonderful? And we're not saying they're not, but there's not a lot of concrete support around caregiving work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk more about that later. But the women who participated in these research groups are the women who created the model of what this supportive environment could be like. And then it spread by word of mouth. So someone who was a member of the original Mother Center had a sister who lived somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So one started in St. Louis, and one started in, in the neighboring county. So it almost immediately became national in scope because the word spread.
Mm-hmm.
And the centers meet mothers' needs because they do provide an environment in which women can be real with each other, where
mm-hmm.
you don't have to put on a face and say, well, of course, everything's wonderful. And we do share all the joys, too. It's not just, a complaining session. It's really,
mm-hmm.
this is what I'm trying to accomplish with the way I'm raising my children. This is what I'm trying to achieve as a woman, as a mother, as a wife, as a partner, as an employee, whatever. It's a very complex array of life experiences that
mm-hmm.
women have to integrate their mothering into
mm-hmm.
or, you know, try to achieve some kind of integration between their responsibilities and their wishes to be the kind of mother they want to be
mm-hmm.
with the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we live, we tend to separate those two things.
Right.
We don't look at the person as a whole person in a holistic way.
Mm-hmm.
We look at the person, if we're the boss, we look at this woman as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't necessarily want to know if she has kids or what her kids need from her. All we want to know is that she's going to give us what we need from her as an employee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that happens in a lot of different ways in our lives, and we aren't able to really bring those different parts of our lives together so well.
I understand.
It is a struggle. It's a challenge. And the Mother Center offers an opportunity to talk about how are you managing and what are you doing to help you be able to do what you want to do in terms of your caregiving and also do what you want to do and need to do in terms of your career, your development as an individual, your aspirations, your goals, your dreams, etc. And it also is a lovely place to learn more about normal child development. Many of us have babies and have not had exposure to children, and so we're not quite sure what is realistic and what is normal for a two-year-old to be doing.
Right.
And those issues can be pretty critical if you have unrealistic expectations of what your children are capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you may come away feeling like your child is bad or disobedient
mm-hmm.
when actually they are not capable of doing what you want them to do. You know,
right.
a case in point might be taking a very young child to a church service that lasts an hour.
Mm-hmm.
At certain ages, a child is not capable of sitting for a whole hour,
mm-hmm.
you know, and unless the parent understands that and makes accommodations for that, whether it's bringing snacks or walking outside for a few minutes with the child and then bringing them back in or whatever that is, or perhaps leaving them with a sitter,
right, right.
you know, sometimes the parents are feeling that the child is being disobedient or defiant when in actuality they're just not capable of the attention span or whatever that is. So
that's
an important piece to share with each other and also to share parenting techniques.
Right.
You know, so that's what the Mother Centers provide. Those are the kinds of needs women have. And creating a non-judgmental place where you can really make a real connection to other people who are empathic,
mm-hmm.
who really want to hear your story, want to share theirs, and where you can learn from each other is so invaluable. And people, when they are parenting in isolation, it just makes the job that much harder.
Right.
So,
it's interesting what you have just mentioned, because one of the things that I know during, in my book, I talk about this wonderful woman that I've encountered over the years who I've addressed as my moms, and also my adoptive mom in Malaysia, and they grew up in a generation where, if we talk about the division of family, what I mean is within the division of the family in the sense that if the man have their own cave to go to, the women have their kitchen to go
mm-hmm.
to,
mm-hmm.
and finds that's their own private sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And where they can sort of regroup, refocus, and everything else. And, of course, at that time, they don't share as much. I guess the only person you share perhaps may be your neighbor
mm-hmm.
or because of communicational problems, you know, the lack of telephones or internet and everything else. And in this case, what you guys have provided in terms of a group to get together from a mother's perspective and
mm-hmm.
sharing the best way to know how to raise a child and sharing the experiences. So
mm-hmm.
I can see how you guys have evolved from that standpoint and be giving an outlet and opportunity for people to share
mm-hmm.
the experiences and everything else. That's wonderful. As far as I'm aware right now, there are centers in Colorado, Connecticut, Georgia, Kentucky, Maine, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee. So you have about 11 centers going on throughout the country. Do you see a difference in the trend in different geographic areas and what the needs are a little bit different than others perhaps?
Yes, I just wanted to clarify.
Mm-hmm.
We have centers in 11 states, but we have about 37 centers.
That's correct, yes.
So
this is just in states only. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. The difference from community to community is almost impossible to categorize, depending on who is interested in the program and what their particular needs are. The program is designed to be totally responsive to the women and the families in that community.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we had a center that started in Mississippi, and
mm-hmm.
the day they were supposed to open, a hurricane hit.
Oh, my gosh.
So they were not able to open. When they did open, finally, 2 weeks later, the only topic on these women's minds was how were they able to prepare their very young children for a hurricane without scaring them?
Right.
So they had a very detailed conversation. They categorized and they wrote down all of the ideas that these women said that their families implemented that really worked well. And that information was included in the Mississippi State's Civil Preparedness Package for families of young children, how to prepare for a hurricane. There was another center that was physically located right near an Air Force base. So many of the families whose, for the most part, this was in the early 80s, so for the most part it was the dad who was in the military. And the women, when they got together, a very important topic for them, which was not applicable in my mother center because we didn't have many military families,
right.
was deployment. So they spoke very often about what is it like for dad to be gone for 6 months at a time or a year at a time, at a point where when they come back, their child may not even recognize them. And this was prior to video cameras and the opportunity to see people on the internet. Now those issues are different. They haven't gone away totally, but they are a little bit different because at least you can see each other, you can hear each other in a way that you couldn't at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So the program is very, very responsive to that particular community's needs.
That's fantastic. I think you guys have tailored it down to specific community and, of course, specific situation, the current situation that's occurring within the community itself. How does a community get to center?
Well, moms start these. These are volunteer run. Mm-hmm. They're started by women who hear about it, who read about it, and are interested in seeing if there's an interest in their community in getting one started. From the beginning, they were always called mother's centers. We were, our goal was to find a space in the community. Many churches have been wonderful hosts and landlords and have welcomed these community programs in their spaces. Sometimes it's in a community room, you know, that's accessible to the community.
Right.
We've also been partnering with public libraries, which have sometimes opened up their spaces for meetings of Mother Center groups. Mm-hmm. And we are talking more and more also about Mother's Center circles, so that if there is a smaller community or there is someone who doesn't have, you know, a tremendous amount of time to devote to getting this organization off the ground, you can start something with just a handful of women, and you can rotate in each other's living rooms rather than try to find a public space. You know what I mean?
Right,
so it
right.
can start off very, very small. It is a grassroots effort.
So there's no number in terms of like, hey, you got to have at least 15
no.
or 20 people.
No.
Okay.
No, it could start with a group of four. It could start with a group of six. And then they can determine, do they want to make it more public? Do they want to advertise in the library that there's this group that meets on certain days of the week and you know, attract more people to it? Or do they want to stay small and just, you know, become a support for each other?
Mm-hmm.
And the support really does grow out of this program. There are many of the centers have what we call birthing healing circles, where the women support each other. If someone has a pregnancy where they're required to have bed rest, their fellow Mother Center members will help with meals for the family, will help babysit the older children, will help with laundry. If there's a death in the family, the center will pull together to support that family if there's an illness. So we're, in essence, creating that village that people really need to raise a child.
Right.
You know, and a lot of people are very mobile in this day and age. They follow
right.
the job path. So
right.
you may move from your home where you grew up and your community where you grew up or where your aunts and uncles live, and you don't have that extended family support. So it's very important to build a network. It's almost like networking for moms
That's
and
right.
families, you know.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That people or they know they need to do that for work and for
right.
their careers, but they don't think about it so much for their home life.
Do you guys have I guess, not necessarily an aggressive or a package that you guys could send out to people?
Yes.
Or do you guys advertise in terms of saying, hey, do you have some sort of a national push to say, hey, if you guys are interested, here are the information, and perhaps you can share that with us?
Yes, we do have a website. It's motherscenter.org. That's the S is on mother, but not on center. www.motherscenter.org. And there is a link for starting a center. We also have an 800 number, 877-939-MOMS. And extension 106 is Lisa, who is the person who consults with women in the community who are interested in getting something started. We have materials we can share. We have expertise over the past 34 years that we've collected. And we also can put people in touch with other centers so that the centers don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
They kind of learn
right.
from each other the way the moms learn from each other.
Right.
And that's part of our goal as the national organization to
right.
get that networking happening among all the programs. So we help with fundraising ideas if that's necessary. We help with PR ideas, press releases, and things like that.
Great. Now, that brings us to about mothering. I mean, we talked about some statistics earlier in the program. In the your website, the work of mothering benefits all of us, children, families, and society, but it requires much physical and mental energy, strength, and the ability to function with limited social support. Can you tell us about some of the women that you feel that can exemplify mothers that that are put in this position that has limited social support?
This may sound a little shocking,
mm-hmm.
but our take on this is that all mothers
mm-hmm.
are essentially lacking social support for that work.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Obviously, there are mothers who are much better positioned financially, where they can buy what they need. They can get a nanny. They can get child care that's good quality because they have the means to provide that. And on the other end, there are single moms who may be working for minimum wage, or they,
mm-hmm.
there may be moms who are on public assistance and who are required to work in order to qualify for their public assistance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little schizophrenic where mm-hmm. over the years we have talked a lot in our country about family values
mm-hmm.
and about, excuse me, in some quarters, people talk about how important it is for mothers to do that caregiving work for their children and stay home. There is, mm-hmm. you know, there are segments of society that truly believe that a mother should be at home with their children if at all possible.
Right.
And yet, on the other end, when a mom is poor and needs public assistance, we require them to go out to work
mm-hmm.
without providing any way for them to afford quality child care.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always affordable. It's not always accessible. It may be across town, and they don't have a car to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they get their child to daycare, get to work, get back to daycare, and get back home if
mm-hmm.
transportation is an issue? So it has to be accessible. It has to be affordable. And it certainly has to be good quality. And
mm-hmm.
our attitude has often been that child care, the work of taking care of a child, especially a younger child, is unskilled labor,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that you don't need anything special. You don't need to know anything special.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the brain development information that's been coming out over the past 5 years and a little bit more shows that an empathic relationship with an adult who understands child development
mm-hmm.
is quite critical to a child's brain development,
mm-hmm.
and that there are certain things that happen between age 0 and 3
mm-hmm.
that are critical to the child's development,
mm-hmm.
and that once you miss that window of opportunity,
right.
it's much more difficult, and in some cases, in extreme cases of neglect, it may be impossible to resurrect those portions of the brain and those neurons and synapses that are developing. They can't ever get to the level that they could have gotten
mm-hmm.
if the child had been cared for adequately. So, you know, I don't want to be alarmist, and I'm not saying this is, you know, that's a very extreme case, but we don't value that kind of work. If you think about even the professions, even the paid work that people do, daycare providers,
mm-hmm.
in my area of the country where it's a very high standard of living, a very high cost of living, I meant to say, in, you know, the New York metropolitan
right.
area, in this day and age, a child care provider in a daycare center can expect to make about $18,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a woman who was looking for that kind of work, and she was asked routinely if she had a master's degree.
Mm.
You know,
wow.
who could afford, after paying for college and a master's
right.
degree, who could
right.
afford to work for $18,000 a year? In my neighborhood,
right.
you couldn't possibly maintain a rent and a car, insurance and gas, and
right.
for $18,000 a year. You can't live on your own.
Right.
So what are we saying about people who take care of children?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those professions are not well paid, and the unpaid caregiving work that mothers do is totally invisible. It's just expected.
I think, don't you think that there's a big difference? You mentioned something which is very interesting because, of course, science educates us about all of this. you know, there's a big difference here between babysitting and baby caring.
Yes.
You know, and yeah. And you know, it's like house sitting. You know, oh, you don't have to do anything; just show up, turn
right.
on the lights, turn it off, and
right.
walk out. And so, the concept is, of course, you know, it's like, oh yeah, babysitting. You're talking about unskilled laborers, and that's very true. All I need to do is sit with Junior here,
right?
You know? And that's about it. But what we're talking about here is a totally different scenario and a situation, because science has proven the fact that there's a lot that can be done at a very young age. So I think we, to a fault, maybe we need to start changing the labels we give to
mm-hmm.
To such a caretaking project or a chore here, rather than babysitting, to be baby caring in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And the other side of that coin, I mean, that's looking at it from what the child needs,
mm-hmm.
from what the mom needs. When you take on caregiving responsibility for your child, and I'm not saying, you know, for most moms, that's not a choice.
Right.
I mean, you absolutely will do that. There's
right.
no question about that. However, you are putting yourself at great financial risk
mm-hmm.
by doing that, because the structures of our society have never looked at that caregiving work as having any kind of monetary value.
Mm-hmm.
In some countries, they count the work that housewives and mothers do all day long that is not paid as part of their gross domestic product.
Mm.
That there is value to someone being home and
right.
making sure the house is presentable,
right.
you know, a healthy environment that's clean enough, that there's, you know, adequate nutrition, that the children are taken care of, not only physically, but emotionally, intellectually,
mm-hmm.
That there is a value to society to that,
mm-hmm.
that we can't have productive citizens without that. We can't compete globally without
mm-hmm.
that, without that start. And some countries recognize that.
Right.
We do not. And the way our structures are set up, our divorce and legal system,
mm-hmm.
the flexibility or inflexibility in the workplace, our taxation system has been set up in a way that women often get it in the neck financially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because once they have caregiving responsibilities for their children,
mm-hmm.
and women have been told for a generation now,
mm-hmm.
go out, get an education, become independent, have your own career, be able to support yourself, and that's all well and good, and women have been taking that to heart, and, you know, more than 50% of college graduates are now women.
Mm-hmm.
There are increasing numbers in the fields of law and accounting and medicine. However, if you look at how their progression through their careers and their professions goes in terms of getting more and more responsible positions and working their way up the career ladder,
right.
they hit the maternal wall. When
right.
they have children, I can't tell you how many phone calls we get from women who say, I had it all figured out. You know, I didn't have my baby until I was older because I
right.
wanted to get my career under my belt. I wanted to get to be partner. I wanted to do this, and this, and I've done that, and now I'm finding there is no way I can be a litigator and have a new baby
mm-hmm.
unless I'm willing to just hire somebody to be home with my baby, and I don't have a life with my baby much
right.
because I work 70 hours or 80 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't build into our structures, our work structures, our political structures, our tax structures. I mean, it's everywhere.
Right.
Any kind of, I don't want to use the word accommodation because it sounds like somebody's doing you a favor.
Right.
But any structures that help support caregiving work that's absolutely essential to human development,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
women do predominantly, doesn't mean that men are not doing it more.
Right.
Thank goodness men are doing that more and more. And now with the economic downturn, there
right.
have been many articles about men losing their jobs and being at-home dads and mom is still working.
Right.
So many more men are experiencing this themselves. And it will be interesting to see when they go back to work, will their attitudes be different about how important that work was mm-hmm. when they were at home with their kids, and the relationship that they built with their children
right.
that they want to continue to maintain, and can they do that and still be the good employee?
I think it's what's interesting about that is that I am, as part of this celebrating Mother's Day series that I'm doing, in about two shows down in a couple of weeks, I am doing the Forgotten Mothers, the real Mr. Mom. And whether it's by choice or by circumstance, these families have the dad who also plays the mom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite interesting because you said that, you know, in terms of you have to truly experience it walking in the shoes
mm-hmm.
to really realize the demand
mm-hmm.
and the challenges. But most importantly, what people forget is the reward, I think,
yeah.
that comes with the fact that you have the quality time spent with a stay-at-home mom in a way. And in no ways I'm promoting stay at home or whatever, because I think that's a choice that each individual has to make on their own. But certainly I know growing up on my own in Malaysia with my mom staying at home, she was basically the COO of the family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She ran everything and,
right.
and she kept up with everything and
right.
and it was very, very different. And the fact that my sister actually has a lot of benefit from that, because even though her and her husband end up working, and well, grandma is taking care of the kids, so in a way grandma becomes that child care provider
mm-hmm.
that has a stay home sort of a concept here. And
yeah.
to date my nephews are very, very well they grew up to be great men.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put
mm-hmm.
it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can understand where you're coming from in terms of being able to provide the sort of a quality, it's not quantity, but quality of care.
Right.
That,
and
that
it's interesting
yes.
you use the word choice,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
we do want women to have a choice. We want families to have choices
mm-hmm.
about who will work, who will stay home.
Right.
You know, but the choices are not adequate yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How many women would opt to have a part-time job
right.
if they could afford it? And they could better afford it if there was quality,
mm-hmm.
affordable child care.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you have to make a certain amount of money in order to be able to afford the child care.
Right.
So, or what happens, you get a part-time job, but you lose every single benefit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you might not be able to afford to do that. If your family is dependent on your medical insurance, you can't go part-time, because then you won't get your medical insurance. So we think we have a choice, and we do, but
mm-hmm.
the choices we have to pick from are not necessarily the choices that we would create if we had the way to create something that looks a bit different from what things look like right now. So we'd like women to think about that. Think outside the box. What would help you?
Right.
You know, if you could get a part-time job where your career aspirations weren't totally crushed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some professions, if you're not there every single day, you know, and all day long, you're not seen as a serious employee who
right,
really
right.
is interested in
right.
Advancing your career. That may not be the case. You may be very serious,
right.
but you have responsibilities, and it's not always just children,
right.
especially with people having children in their 30s and 40s.
Right.
They also will have, in a few years, elderly parents who need
right.
care.
Right.
So
right.
it may not be just that your children are the ones needing your attention.
That's
it may
correct.
Be other family members, your
That's
partner,
true.
Your parents, you know, even a very good friend who was like a mother to you.
Right.
You know,
no, it's true. It's
you.
Very, very true. It's very true because it's basically comes back to the quality of time spent and
right.
versus the quantity that is needed to get done. And I think and that, again, has got to do with society and the corporate agenda and everything else. If you are result-oriented, and I think there are a lot of companies nowadays that are accommodating that. I know that more and more people are able to work at home. And,
mm-hmm.
again, it comes back to the technology that we have
right.
that allows that, you know, to happen.
Right.
I have a question here with regards to trends in the last several years. You had touched about it just now in your explanation. Nationally, the trend for the last several years has been more moms opting to have their children, obviously, in their 30s once they get their career and family stabilized. And however, in the past year or so, there seemed to be a disconnect from this when you when becoming a teenage mom, for lack of better reason, is perceived to be being cool.
Mm-hmm.
Has the media just played this thing out as much as they can, or is it a true trend that what we're going to be seeing in the years to come? And can you tell me if your organization is addressing this issue at all?
Yeah, we don't really address teen motherhood in a general way. We have in the past gotten grant funding
mm-hmm.
to bring the kind of supportive programming that happens at our local centers to teen mothers. But we work with agencies who can address their other needs, because there are educational needs for the mom,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are housing needs, there's just so much more that these girls need that we are not able to provide as a grassroots organization. So we partner with other organizations that are already addressing
mm-hmm.
the other needs.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm not a social scientist. I do not know the exact statistics of teen pregnancy. I know there had been a dip not too long ago in teen pregnancy, and
mm-hmm.
if that's, you know, coming back up, I'm not certain. But certainly anything that catches on in the media
mm-hmm.
is not necessarily fact.
Mm-hmm.
The media is not necessarily doesn't necessarily have a goal of giving the straight facts.
Mm-hmm.
They are selling a newscast, or they're selling a print publication.
Mm-hmm.
And what sells is controversy. So they can take one thing that has some truth to it and make it sound like a much different thing than it really is.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't put a lot of stock just because the media may have caught on to a certain thing
mm-hmm.
and is talking about it more to mean that that's really happening in the degree to which they make it seem it's happening. So if anyone is interested in that issue, I would go back to the census information or agencies that deal with teen pregnancy and find out from them what really is happening. The
mm-hmm.
point I'd like to make is that the media has often affected mothers in negative ways, in the sense that there has been and continues to be periodically a push about the mommy wars, which is supposed to be about the at-home mothers and the working mothers and how they're at each other's throats. They don't like each other. Each of them thinks that the other person is not doing a good enough job as a mother. And I'm not saying that there isn't some angst. Women
right.
have angst about what they do or don't do, because they
right.
are wanting to be the best mother they can be.
That's correct.
However, they have some choices to make around if they are going to work and when. And because the choices, as I said before, are not wonderful choices,
right.
no matter what choice you make, there's some negative to it. Nothing is perfect.
That's right.
So if you decide to stay home, you may be worried about what kind of role model are you being for your daughters and your sons, that you have a degree in accounting and you're not using it for 10 years while you're
mm-hmm.
home raising your family. What does that say to your children?
Right.
You also may be worried that because you're functioning on one person's salary, you can't afford the music lessons that your neighbors are sending their kids to.
Right.
Or you can't afford certain things, certain vacations or whatever, and you're worried about how that's going to impact on your family.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you feel that you must work full time, you worry about the daycare you have. Is
mm-hmm.
it adequate? Is it babysitting or is it child care?
That's right.
As you know, very poignantly pointed out. Do you feel guilt because you didn't see your child's first step?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the child care provider told you about that.
Right.
We also are, you know, so there is some angst that people feel, and sometimes it makes you feel better to convince yourself that the choice you made is the best one, because
mm-hmm.
it makes you feel like it kind of lowers your anxiety a little bit because you've talked yourself into thinking that what you chose was the best path. And actually, it may be the best path for you, but it's not necessarily the best path for everyone. And there isn't a big war out there. Women are not, you know, yelling at each other constantly about this, but there is angst. But the you know, the talk show hosts and the people who write the columns in the newspapers, they make it sound like women are out there bad-mouthing each other, when really women are out there just trying to do the best they can do for themselves and their families.
Precisely. Real life, real situation. And we have to live it the best way we know how.
Right.
And I've always talked about that. I think people don't realize it, that the parents will always be the best they can be for you. And the best way they know how.
Right.
And so, and are we actually, in the flip side of it, of course, looking in the mirror, you know, are we being the best we we can be in supporting the entire, you know, unit family and so forth?
Right.
What is the greatest challenge about being a mother in the and mothering in the 21st century?
Well, I think the current state of anxiety that everyone lives with, the post 9/11 security fears, and some of this, you know, the safety at home, when you have to worry that your child may be the victim of an internet predator, so that if they have a computer in their bedroom, you can't feel safe. You can't feel that they're safe, even sitting in their own bedroom. The issues around all of the social networking online, Facebook and MySpace, and what children share that they don't realize is not a good idea to share.
The front door is no longer a security measure.
Right. And the over-sexualization that children are exposed to, that as parents we are trying to control what our kids take in, but how difficult that is, because children are wired constantly, you know, between the phones and the texting and the Facebook and the video games and TV, it's just, and movies and songs. It's a constant amount of information that children are taking in over and over and over again. When I was growing up, I saw a movie once. We went to the movie house, we saw the movie, and we went home, and I never saw it again. You know, so how it would have an impact, certainly, but it doesn't have the same impact that, you know, my niece, who has seen Little Mermaid a million times. She knows every single word of every single song and the dialogue. That has a much greater impact on her than my seeing Lady and the Tramp in 1956, you know, once. So, you know, how as parents, as a mother, how do you deal with all of these heightened anxieties? And then, obviously, the economic challenges of the current situation, you know, that doesn't help either. So how do you keep yourself balanced, focused, positive, and yet deal with these very real anxieties and challenges? So it's quite complex, you know, compared to a mom in 1850 who lived on a farm, and, you know, the only news she got was what was happening in her town. You know, and her children were doing the same work that, you know, her grandchildren, you know, her grandmother had done and her grandchildren will do. You know, things are changing so rapidly now, and there's so much information. It's almost like an overload. So how do you navigate all of that as a mother? I think those are the real challenges for the 21st century.
And you're right. I, you know, echoing what you have you said, because life was much simpler then, and so the mom, for lack of a better term, may not necessarily has to be up with to speed with the latest technological breakthrough and everything else. But now it seems like you have to be equipped with all this information, and I think as a person, as an individual, you may not be able to get all of this by yourself, and a group like your organization certainly allows people to be able to share experiences.
right.
And get all the resources. And actually, you guys provide resources, I think.
Right,
I'm looking at it from that perspective where,
right.
you know, hey, so-and-so over there have experienced this. This is something that you might want to look for.
Right.
And so you're teaching them to look at symptoms and situations and how to address the issues as it comes up. I think that's a unique situation. So this brings us to actually to the public policy aspects of mothering in the 21st century. Now, does the National Association of Mother Centers, as it moves forward, will there be an advocacy group for mothers and caregivers, such as the AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons, that could harness the voting and spending power of the demographics that translate to nationally recognized lobby, and would there be some sort of a mothers' union or something similar to the auto steel workers, and where mothers pay dues and get benefits from it, and those kind of things? Do you think the National Association of Mother Centers is going to be moving towards in that direction, so to speak?
We definitely have been using the words a mother's movement for a very long time,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because we see that the first step is to educate and to raise consciousness about the issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then to empower women to work for the change they think is necessary
mm-hmm.
to assist their work as mothers and to support their families.
Mm-hmm.
So we are a 501c3, we're a nonprofit, so we don't endorse candidates, we don't do that kind of thing, but
mm-hmm.
we certainly have an obligation to let our members know what we have learned along the way about the economic impact of being a caregiver and things like that. So we do want to create a mother's movement so that mothers would be more in alignment with each other in terms of what they, that they have a voice at the table
mm-hmm.
in public, that someone says, well, what about mothers and families? How is this going to impact on them? You know, what do mothers have to share in their experience that hasn't been part of the public conversation so far?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, traditionally, it has been males, white males,
mm-hmm.
actually, who have had the positions of power
mm-hmm.
and who have had the decision-making
mm-hmm.
ability to set public policy. Well, as you said before, until you really do the child care,
mm-hmm.
you don't understand the complexity of that work, and
right.
you don't understand the importance of it. So it's not like they consciously said, oh, we don't want to think about that. They don't
right.
even have it rumbling around in their head because they
right.
never had that experience.
Right.
So if we can have more women in political office
mm-hmm.
who have had that experience and can say, I know from experience that this piece of legislation is missing a very big, you know, aspect
right. Right.
here.
Right.
And we need to address that. You
right.
know, I'm not saying there's any one big solution and that every mother is going to be politically exactly the same as every other mother.
Right.
But what mothers go through and what families need, mothers can speak to.
Right.
And they need to be part of that conversation.
Do you think, though, generationally speaking, I think the trend has moved away from a segregation kind of a approach in terms of raising family? Because I know, like you had mentioned about, you know, even like in my various moms, I mean, we talk about, you know, the men has their own cave, and then the
mm-hmm.
women, in this case, found sanctuary in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, the newer generations is all about we. We
mm-hmm.
cook together,
mm-hmm.
we do things together and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that will itself, as society, sort of every generation has its own way of sort of taking care of society's challenges by itself, that now you have more of the, because when you look at a family right now, the younger generations, there's no clear cut on, and I'm using kitchen as an example here where, you know, both are in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
both are in the living room, both are, you know, just about everywhere. So
mm-hmm.
don't you think that will take care of itself in terms of for the guys to have, a better understanding about, taking care of babies and
yeah,
and
absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, it's a cultural change, which
mm-hmm.
doesn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it happens on one level, maybe in the house. But if
mm-hmm.
the workplace doesn't also support that,
right.
then that's not going to you know, that change is not going to happen so quickly.
Right.
It's going to kind of put some stumbling blocks and roadblocks in the way for that change to really, really happen 100%. There are still, I believe it's 26 states where it is not illegal for someone in a job interview to ask a woman if she has children and if she's married. Someone who moved from New York to Pennsylvania was shocked because in New York it is illegal to do that.
I see.
And when she moved to Pennsylvania, she was a single mom because her husband had left her. She moved to Pennsylvania because it was less expensive to live there. And it took her over a year to get a job, and she was very skilled because they were permitted to ask her, are you married? And she said no. And do you have children? And she said yes. And she was told to her face, we do not hire single mothers because the perception is that they are not going to have their 100% dedicated focus on work. They're going to be worried about their children. So, you know, and even if she remarried and she had a husband who did 50% of every home, you know, chore and took care of the kids and whatever, if she's still facing that kind of discrimination in the workplace, things, you know, so it has to, it really has to be a 360 degree look at all the different things that impact on families. Not just, you know, certainly that will change things. And as those families grow and those mothers and fathers become legislators and senators and, you know, CEOs of companies, they will bring their new culture and their new thinking into where they're going. But that takes a while. It doesn't, it's not going to happen quickly.
It is a generational change, and I think it's happening slowly but surely. Obviously, it is a marathon, ironically. It's not a sprint, obviously. And but it, I think slowly but surely it is happening, and I think having the right approach to everything, sometimes a marathon helps because then if it's the right approach, then it's sustained itself. It, you know, it doesn't revert back to the old ways. This brings us to the last question in terms of public policy, talking about celebrating motherhood in the 21st century. In a perfect world, what three things could President Obama and Congress do to help mothers?
It's so interesting that you wanted to ask that question because last year, our Mother's Day effort was the top 10 Mother's Day gifts that mothers really want. So I didn't have to go far. I had to pick the ones that I think were the most important. And the three that were at the top of our list were paid sick leave, which really was highlighted just in the past 2 weeks with the whole flu worry, that there are too many people who do not have a paid sick day and that their job is in jeopardy if they have to be home either because they are sick or their family member is sick. So that is really crucial, not only to them and their family member, but to all of us who don't want to be exposed to someone who's sick. The second is paid family leave. We are only one of five industrialized countries in the world that does not mandate paid leave. The other four are Lesotho, Liberia, Swaziland, and Papua New Guinea. So most of the other countries that you can think of the names of very easily off the top of your head, Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, you know, Peru, they all have some kind of mandated paid family leave so that when families welcome a new child into their ranks, whether it's by birth, adoption, stepchild, whatever, they have time to get that relationship going among the mom, the dad, and the children. And sometimes it's quite extended. We don't have that. And safe, affordable, accessible childcare, which I mentioned before. And many of those same countries have some kind of subsidized childcare system, national subsidized childcare system. And they're not all the same. There are very, very different ways of doing it in, from one place to another. So I'm not saying it's an easy or a one-size-fits-all solution, but there are different ways of approaching that that we have not looked at or been willing to implement, and that is absolutely essential to a mother's sense of security for her family, because there will be times, even if she wants to stay home, that she may not be able to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she's recently widowed, she may have no choice but to go to work, regardless
right.
of the age of her children.
Right.
You know, if her husband is disabled, whatever. So, as I said, these aren't always choices. Sometimes they're just necessities.
Right, right.
And
well, I mean, under acute situations like that, you guys do want, I mean, you believe in having something that will help to have a smoother transition, because I think the paid family leave that you had mentioned about, that certainly helps to transition the entire family to welcoming a new member of the family together. And obviously, safe, affordable child care allows to continue the,
mm-hmm.
the well-being, I guess, of the entire family, because you guys did advocate that in terms of happy family translate to happy community, obviously, to a happy a country and everything else. So
mm-hmm.
so I can see the continuity of what you guys are trying to advocate here. And as we come to a close to this hour, my gosh, I mean, the hour seems to pass by so quick here when we're having fun talking about wonderful issues. Like every guest that I have on the show, I do want to give you an opportunity to share some of your recipe for living with us this morning with our guests. So here you are, the opportunity to let us know what is your recipe for living.
My recipe for living is to treat people with respect and to assume their good intent until you find out otherwise.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think you really encapsulated it so well in your book that mothering is really caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes beautifully beyond that one person in your life that we often you know, that obviously is our mother, to examine those other people who have been a help to us, who have been supportive, whose input has helped us grow, to look at those relationships and to honor them and to appreciate them, and to pay it forward
mm-hmm.
and become one of those people who intentionally forges a relationship of that kind with other people, both children and other adults in your life, and making it happen if necessary. I mean, some of us, unfortunately, have not had a nurturing environment. We can stop that cycle and
mm-hmm.
become the person that we did not have growing up.
Right.
Or if we did have it, we could expand upon that. I mean, each person does this in their own unique way with their own personality and temperament, so it would be unique for each of us because we never outgrow that need for a genuine connection to other people.
Definitely. Well, Linda, thank you so much for your recipe for living, and actually thank you very much for spending the hour with us on the air and letting us know about mothering and the 21st century, about what the National Association of Mothers are doing for mothers everywhere. I do want to thank you very much for being on the air with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It was fun.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you again for endorsing my book. I truly appreciate it very much, and I have just the next minute or so right here to wrap things up. I do want to thank you, our guest, Linda Juergens of the National Association of Mother Centers, for being with us this morning. You can also listen to this show after the show because this show is going to be archived at from mymamaskitchentalkradio.com as well as from mymamaskitchen.com. And johnnytan.com. And for the next week, we will be having a topic that is very dear to some friends of mine. It is called Coming to Full Circle, Mother-Daughter Breast Cancer, a Family Affair. And this is about being a parents to our parents. And this is something very special. Join us next week for Coming to Full Circle, Mother-Daughter Breast Cancer, a Family Affair. And also, I'd like to give you a quick rundown on what's been going on. I want to thank the staff and the community relations manager for Barnes & Noble at Southlake. We had a wonderful book signing at Southlake this past Saturday. And this coming Thursday, I will be in Lubbock, Texas, for a book signing at Barnes & Noble at 6:30, And on May the 8th to the 10th, I will be in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, visiting my three moms, and we will also be on TV at WAFB Channel 9 on Mother's Day at 7:50 in the morning for a Mother's Day special. Again, thank you very much for being with us this morning, and please tune in next week to join us again on the air. And the number again to call is 347-327-9995. Thank you again, and talk to you guys next Tuesday. Bye-bye. Linda, thank you.
Thank you.